It's always the case that when a team is struggling the way the Mets are, that the manager is the first to go, and he's probably the least culpable of everybody who has contributed to this morass of a season that the Mets are in. Injuries have played a part, poor decisions by the front office have played a part, guys underperforming their expectations have played a part. Mendy was a great communicator, he still is, and he'll get another job somewhere else. But the Mets had to do something, and this is the move that teams make. And maybe it'll make a difference, and maybe it won't. But I feel bad for Carlos Mendoza. It's not his fault that this team is 13 games under 500, and I'm sure he'll get another opportunity at some point down the road.
John Heyman just tweeted the Mets just fired Carlos Mendoza. Remember, about a month ago, after the firing of Rob Thompson in Philadelphia, the Mets were asked about Carlos Mendoza, and they said, "No, we don't think we have a managerial problem. We're going to keep our manager." And now they just let him go. Now it has gotten really bad, and the sweep of the series against the Cubs was really ugly. But this is not Carlos Mendoza's fault. It is what you do when your team's spiraling. And here's the thing, as a general manager, when things are going poorly, you understand that the manager is the buffer between your job and being let go. And so, you think you're going to try to find a way to make a change with the manager, that it's going to give you some juice to turn things around, knowing that if it doesn't, then all eyes now fall on you as the general manager. So, I will say that I thought this was a clumsy roster from the start. I don't think Carlos Mendoza is a bad manager at all. I think I hope he gets another shot at it somewhere down the road, because I actually think he's done a good job. But John Heyman from MLB Network reporting that Carlos Mendoza has been fired by the New York Mets.
We got a special edition here of the Talking Mets podcast on June the 26th, 2026. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at the TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You get me on X at TalkingMetsNOG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, and come join me at the TalkingMetsPodcast.com. Chat for free, premium content, updates on the show, all at the TalkingMetsPodcast.com. And I want to thank the good folks from the Believe Network for supporting this show. Well, it's a Friday afternoon here. David Stearns is going to be addressing the media in about an hour, but I'm coming to you. Reaction: Mets announced this morning that they have fired Carlos Mendoza, Andy Green, who actually played for the Mets briefly, a cup of coffee of all cup of coffees in 2009, senior vice president of baseball development. He'll be taking over, former manager of the San Diego Padres. And, you know, we kind of knew back on Memorial Day when we did that first getting to know you phase that we'd probably be here. It didn't feel like this was a Mets team that was going to climb out of their hole. What happened in 2024 is such an anomaly. The whole Grimace OMG summer, such an anomaly what that team did. And here we are just a week from the 4th of July, and we're already thinking about 2027. And this could not be a worse situation for Mets fans, with obviously all the money that has been spent, labor strife looming. It looks like both the owners and the players couldn't be further apart. Real thought that there's going to be some significant baseball missed in 2027, and that might dominate our conversation throughout the winter, which would really suck, to be quite honest with you. That's not what you want to spend your time doing. And now the Mets have moved on from another manager here in the Cohen era, and there's a lot of questions about their president of baseball operations, and we'll see what he has to say. But I think I'm going to start with this. Am I surprised about what happened this morning? No. Maybe a little bit, because I thought at this point with the team, not going anywhere, a manager or any kind of managerial change, if you really wanted to have an impact, and I believe there'd be no impact on this, had to happen probably a month ago. And I don't think any manager could have made this better. Mattingly comp is horrible. The Phillies were underperforming. They got off to a slow start. They still have some really good hitters in their late prime, the Schwarbers, the Harper, Trey Turner, who's severely underperforming. You have Wheeler and Sanchez. I mean, Christopher Sanchez is going out there and pitching like he's Oral Hershiser in 1988. Wheeler's come back from TOS surgery, a serious shoulder surgery, better than ever. Kudos to him. He's proven me wrong time and time again. I was right that he was going to get hurt in a Phillies uniform. I was wrong that it would compromise his career and he wouldn't be any good. So that was one of my takes that was wrong, and I'm happy for him. You know, I am wrong once in a while, and I can't admit that. But, you know, Cohen now on his fourth manager, Rojas, he inherited Buck, Mendoza, and now Andy Green, who's an interim. And really, let's be fair, is a front office type that's coming down to see what the hell is going on. Let's put it that way. I think the front office probably, in a lot of ways, outside of the injuries, is scratching their head. No manager could have made this better. And Andy Green isn't going to make this any better. And if the Mets do play better, it's because they got healthy and maybe some of their young players are starting to play to their potential. And that would have happened, and I will stand by this, that if that has nothing to do with the guy who's making out the lineup or maybe just presenting the lineup, depending on how you look at it, in the dugout. Soto and Lindor haven't been healthy. Alvarez, Vientos, and Beatty are, let's be very frank, and I think a lot of people who used to criticize me for this, they're busts. They really are. They're busts, and I think fans are starting to realize that after all the back and forth. Bo Bichette has gotten off to the what has become a typical first year, at least in a Mets uniform, New York-itis. So let's put it that way. The two component moves that were meant to kind of offset the loss of Nimmo and Alonso, hand the mantle over of some of that production to the young players, and then round it out with a couple of veterans, maybe one with upside in Robert Jr. and then Polanco. They've been busts. Peralta's been average. Maybe he's hurt. Even Steve Gelbs now is talking about what we talked about the arm angle being significantly down. He didn't mention injury. Didn't look like the Mets believe injury, but look, the facts are the facts. The arm angle's down to its lowest level since he had shoulder issues in 2022 or 2023, one of those years. If you want to hear about it, I talked about it last week on Sunday. McClain's going through his growing pains. You're asking Semien, Torrens, Taylor, Jared Young. Do I need to go on and on with some of these other component players, MJ Melendez, to play bigger roles? And then you have Ewing and Carson Benge, very promising prospects, hope of the future. You're bringing them up to be saviors. That's just flat out not fair because Benj went through his lumps in April. And Ewing's been okay, but he's not a finished product yet either. So is it fair that Mendoza is fired? No, it's not fair. Is this something that needed to be done? It's getting pretty ugly. Now, I know I always make fun, and it's so predictable, the front of the New York Post. Do something, anything. The do something, anything crowd. The do something, anything crowd likes to break things and then feel good for 5 seconds and then go, well, it's all still broken. What did you do? And believe me, that's going to happen. Because the next narrative will be, look at poor Mendoza, who Stearns let take the fall for what is his mess. Stearns knows it's his mess. And look, Carlos Mendoza was a well-respected candidate when the Mets interviewed him, and I think he'll get another job. I really do. I think he'll get another job. Now, there was some things, and we'll put aside last year in the poor play in the second half because the starting pitching was the reason why they collapsed down the stretch. It wasn't bad clubhouse or Soto and Lindor not getting along. Like, you got to lose that in those narratives. Those are just Twitter X talk radio, banal, myopic fan narratives. But this year, I think, and the energy level's been bad, and losing will do that. Is that part of the Mendoza? I'm not in the clubhouse, and you really don't get a good inkling into clubhouses anymore anyway. But the lack of discipline on the automatic balls and strikes, that's something. I think many have brought up how Vientos running through a stop sign, you know, the benching, maybe some mental mishaps on the field not being addressed. I think Mendoza was a guy that didn't want to embarrass anybody. I think in this day and age, knowing how sensitive players are, how everything turns into, particularly in this place, turns into a controversy. He probably was careful about how hard he would go in on people. And, you know, maybe that changed a little bit about how he went about his job. I don't know. Certainly the look is bad. I doubt he is making the decisions on the lineup and the game plan alone. I always said that a manager's job, and I'll say it again because I really believe it, is to manage up with the front office, and I'm guessing that was going on because I don't think he would have lasted this long if it didn't. Keep a clean clubhouse. Maybe that's where he was failing. He was losing the clubhouse. And it's always been one of those cases that if the team stops preparing, if the team's tuning the manager out, that's when you have to make a move. That's probably what they felt. I doubt Stearns is going to go on in about an hour and say it's because the fans and some talkhead at WFAN wanted it. You have to manage the media. At this point, the podium and the answers were getting really silly. What do you want the guy to say night in and night out when you have one loss after another? If you were in a rebuilding phase, maybe you could have some conversations with the media about different players. I think Buck and, to a lesser degree, Terry were really good at Terry was really good during the purgatory years of giving the media a feeling that he was more impactful and he was pushing the team a little bit harder than he really was, in my opinion. Buck was good at being entertaining. I mean, he'd be talking about Rihanna. I mean, Buck was great at deflecting. It's part of the job. When you have the amount of exposure to the media and there's cameras and X and everybody kind of listening to every single bit of content from the most basic pregame conversation to the scrum after games, I mean, there's only so many ways you could talk about the same thing. Believe me, talking about this team in the little brief weekly snippets and then the little tiny premium content pieces, it's rough, and I'm doing it far less than what a manager is doing. So I think he managed the media pretty well. And then the bullpen, no team. You go to any social media outlet, every fan base's loyalists hate the way their manager manages the bullpen. I don't think he was a mastermind. I think Buck was great at it, but he wasn't Terry Collins bad, who probably was one of the worst bullpen managers this team has ever had. And they made it, and that guy brought a team to World Series. He would look, if anybody deserved to bring a team to the World Series, it was Carlos Mendoza. Terry Collins, not so much, but you know, that's a whole different thing. This is really, I believe, and I don't care, and I doubt, again, I'm going to say this again. Stearns, I'm not going to sit around and wait for him to talk to the media to do this this segment because I don't think he's going to give you much. I think he's starting to insulate himself. I thought over the first couple of years of his tenure, he would give you the answers that he wouldn't give them to you directly, but he would be rather honest. I think that's changing. I think he's being a lot more careful. That's what happens when you feel a little bit of the control going away and things kind of spiraling out of the control. Mendoza's a sacrificial lamb. Andy Green, like I said, is going to go down there on the field and assess for the front office what's going on. The thing that I am concerned about, and this was always something, and if you've been listening for a long time, I talked about it. Money can make life easier as a fan of a baseball team. It covers up a lot of mistakes. It allows you a seat at a table for every single potential big acquisition. But Sandy Alderson said it best, and I wasn't a big Sandy Alderson fan when it was all said and done, but Sandy Alderson, I still remember very vividly his first press conference back when he was kind of steering Cohen those early days. He said, the part of the excess that we have now as an organization with Cohen's wallet is knowing when to use it and when not to. And that's always a very delicate balancing act. And I think the fans, because of the Yankees, because of what they've seen across town, because they lived for so many years, post-Madoff in particular, where there was always a budget where the Wilpons never could get to the next notch with their big market brethren like the Red Sox, like the Yankees, where they just couldn't go in and get a Vlad Guerrero. They couldn't get in on a Jason Giambi situation. They couldn't get in on a Mike Mussina situation. I mean, they could talk about these things. And then if they did get in and bring in a Beltran and a Santana and guys like that, the roster would have to be rather top-heavy because there wasn't enough wiggle room left to round out the depth. And when Cohen comes in, this is supposed to now be all peaches and cream, and it's a yellow brick road to not one, not two, not three, but four World Series. We had in the Dodgers and how well they were able to navigate spending with big money with their equity group that took them over. And I always felt that that's dangerous because we've seen examples where it doesn't always go well. I mean, the Marlins, even as penny pitching as they've been, went on a spending spree about 15 years ago, nearly landed Albert Pujols. Ironically, Pujols in the news for another reason. We'll get to that in a minute. And it didn't work. I mean, the Knicks just won a championship. Who has spent more money on coaches and executives and free agents and hope than Jim Dolan? Think about that. The Rangers have done it to a certain degree at different, again, Dolan again there. The Yankees have had a number of misses in free agency. People don't talk about the Carl Pavanos and Kevin Brown. And I mean, they acquired Randy Johnson, whatever it is that their money allowed them to do. Plenty of misses. To the point when Cashman wrestled away the control from Tampa, truly in the mid-10s, that was the turning point where a lot of people feel the Yankees were able to, first of all, Cashman became the Don over there, and he was able to really steer that team away from going down a dark path. And I think the Mets are the cautionary tale here of what spending without structure does. Without player development does. This now is so toxic. The fans are so negative. And I'm not blaming the fans. I think that's the mistake that people make on social media. I think if you're going to go to the ballpark and chant Pete Alonso and yell and scream and put a paper bag on your head, and that's how you're going to spend your time, I personally think you're wasting your time. Now, it's your money. It's your money. I think you're wasting your time. It's sad. If that's how you want to spend your summer, any summer night, I think it's sad. I think you might as well not go. Go to the ballpark and enjoy what the game can bring, even when it hurts to see what's going on in the field with your favorite team. That's my opinion. I'll stand by it. I'm not telling you how to be a fan. But the fans are toxic. They're frustrated. They're angry. They've hit a threshold now, and I'm not blaming them, but it's a dangerous threshold where they feel like nothing ever is going to work out for them. So anybody and anything that's in front of them that doesn't immediately give them instant gratification is going to get vilified. This is a combination of the 94 Rangers and the curse that they broke all those years, MSG level toxicity. The Knicks were as toxic as anybody, and they still may be. Dolan's still very involved. But the fans weren't toxic. The organization and the relationship with the media was toxic. I think the there's a lot of toxicity here. There's Red Sox-Cubs level curse here. Just since Cohen took over, there's been older... Let's just go back for a minute. Quick minute. Alderson gets sick. He's the GM. Mets are a couple of years off of a pennant in, 2017. And then they hire... 2017, 2018 going into there. And then, he steps down for his cancer treatments. And Manaya, John Rico, and J.P. Ricciardi are kind of cobbling it together. They hire an agent in Brody Van Wagenen. And when the team gets sold, Brody's out. Alderson comes back, hires Jared Porter, scandal. Comes back in, it's Sandy Alderson. Hires Zach Scott, scandal. Leads to Billy Epler, which leads to finally getting the kind of there was nobody who criticized the Stearns move when it was made. That was exactly the type of executive that Cohen wanted. Young, successful, grew up a Mets fan, Ivy League educated, understands how to get the most value out of a club, and now he's got money. And you think you got yourself an Andrew Friedman East Coast version, but you really got yourself potentially a Chaim Bloom, who fizzled out in Boston. Maybe, we'll see. So it's at a point where you're kind of at like a crossroads. And I think we'll talk more about it on Sunday's show. I don't want to get too deep because I just want to get to Andy Green here. But there's no quick fix anymore here. And I don't think anything that Cohen does money-wise, first of all, will be money not well spent. I think he has to look at this roster. He has to look at this team. And, is it a manager? And I think that's part of what Andy Green's role is going to be. Is a manager something that's going to turn things around when presumably the veterans get healthy and maybe there is some pathway to improve some of these prospects, and maybe there's another wave of prospects to come, or maybe there's acquisitions they can make at the deadline, and then we'll see what the offseason brings. You can't even talk about the offseason because you just don't know right now what it's going to be all about. So that's that. What I do believe, and this is where the whole Albert Pujols, the reports are already, Albert Pujols would love to manage Mets. Albert Pujols has been looking to manage a ball club. Carlos Beltran, obviously, is in the building, too. These former Hall of Fame players. Albert Pujols, incredible hitter. One of the more feared hitters in his prime feared. I remember when the Mets played the Cardinals in the championship series in 06, I went to a game, and when he came up there, that guy was legit, you know, one of the best hitters. Like, he was Barry Bonds. He took the mantle from Barry Bonds. He was a great player. And I don't know what would make him a great manager. And even if he has the skill set, similar to Beltran, because now remember, Beltran, unlike Pujols, had different trials and tribulations. I think he had different versions of himself, and his experience playing in New York would make him a better fit as the former player manager team. I don't know how he... I was skeptical when they hired him. I was willing to give it a shot because why not? But I was skeptical, and then we all know what happened. Just because these are Hall of Fame guys, I don't know if they're change agents. And then the bigger question is there really a change agent manager that a front office will allow to be a change agent? In hindsight, Stearns probably shouldn't have fired Buck. I know he wanted to bring in his own person, but he had somebody that 2 years earlier had won 100 games. He came in here and he was building some level of structure and accountability. And he was, I think, building a culture. 2023 went haywire because, again, you had an organization and a team that was not, they did not have the developed prospects to make up for the veterans that you were squeezing the last vestiges of juice out of, the Escobars and the Canas and Scherzer and Verlander and so on and so forth. You had a team that was in a more of a win-now situation because you just didn't have the young players. So 2023, which might not have been as bad if they had not sold off Scherzer and Verlander. And in hindsight, I mean, we'll see what they wound up getting. But with Verlander, it looks like they got basically Tyler Rogers in a couple of months of Tyler Rogers. And with Scherzer, maybe a couple of weeks and a walk-off home run from Robert Jr. Not much, right? Not much. But hindsight again. So, and that, I think, was a mistake. But you just don't have out there. Everybody's bringing up Alex Cora. Of course, there's going to be the legion of former players and the fears that Cohen, who may have a bit of fanboy in him, and he's also a guy that knows, hey, I got this casino. I don't want this place to be empty. You're going to make the same mistakes that the Wilpons would make. A manager who's a great back page and a press conference in November and December. It doesn't matter a hill of beans in May when you lose seven in a row. So Albert Pujols cannot put fannies in the seats. He'll give some semblance of optimism, maybe sell some tickets in the short term, not in the long term. So if you're going to bring in a manager, you got to bring in a manager that truly is a change agent. I think Alex Cora could be that guy. I don't know about Albert Pujols or any other former Hall of Fame player, Don Mattingly type, let's say, that's out there. I don't think that that's what Stearns wants. Now, whether or not he gets the ability and the leeway to make that decision going forward, and Cohen says, look, I want someone to come in here and manage this dugout and get this team going, not an extension of the front office. It would be very unlike, and the more you neuter Stearns' power, and remember, he is the president of baseball operations, not the GM. He's got people working under him. They are the GMs. And again, I'll remind you, the names that nobody talks about, Edward Brizuela and Jonathan Strangio, those are the assistant general managers. Ben Zosma's there. He's the analytics guy. Assistant general manager. Andy Green was player development. Carlos Beltran's on there. Is this like a special assistant? J.D. Martinez is in there. So remember that. Remember that. And what I think you're looking at with Andy Green, and I always thought Andy Green was going to be the next Mets manager. I think I even might have kind of mentioned it at times. It just made too much sense. There's all this managerial experience in the organization, seamless. Yes, he's the interim manager. Yes, I do. Like, I stand by what I just said a couple of minutes ago, where I think he's there to evaluate what's going on from a front office perspective. But if they do well, or they show some signs of life, not saying they're going to make a run for a wild card spot or anything, this is what these front offices want. Now, when he was with San Diego, he lost, and let me make sure I get the numbers right here. He lost 2016, 2017, 2018, lost 94, 91, and 96 games. Now, when he started in San Diego, they were in a rebuild. And he was trying to essentially develop young players. They had traded their veterans away. They had a pretty good farm system. Some of the young players were being called up and were struggling. Sounds familiar, right? And I don't know if San Diego was really at that time really looking to compete at that point. AJ Preller, who everybody loves now, he was there with them too, right? So now they start to, in 2019, play a little better. And Manny Machado comes out and they sign Manny Machado, and expectations are getting a little bit higher. And they struggle, and they lose again. And in 2019, let's see, he wound up getting fired with like 8 games left. So he was fired in September, and they wound up, you know, losing. You know, he wound up losing 85 games on his docket, and away you go. So when things started to turn around, when they had some veterans, when it became less of a caretaker job and a development job, and more of a, hey, we need to win, it sounds like he wasn't up to snuff. And there was even this video. It was Will Myers complaining about him while playing video games on a stream about how he's got to go out and do drills at 3 o'clock. I mean, big leaguers, it's funny, big leaguers today don't really like doing drills that are, in their eyes, banal, but in a lot of ways, it's the detail work. Here we are. We just got off watching a guy in Jalen Brunson. Again, I'm bringing up the Knicks. I know it's driving some people nuts that he does these workouts on footwork and all these little things to continue to be great. And he has no problem with all his accolades, continue to do that. The story goes that Jay Wright, his coach at Villanova, wanted to play golf with him and Josh Hart. And he called him up and says, hey, tee time, 7:30 in the morning. And Brunson's like, no, I got my workouts. I got to stay consistent to that. He could do that, but big league players can't do infield or outfield practice. It's beneath them. And then you know what happens sometimes during the game. So he's an analytics guy. I mean, he had, and in some of the things I've been reading about him in San Diego, he overmanaged. They felt he removed his starters too early. His bullpen management was so-so. These are the usual things that you could criticize a manager for. But you had a rebuilding organization. You brought in veterans. You're asked to win now. And let's face it, if you look at the Padres rosters during those years, they really weren't that good. So we really don't know who Andy Green is. We know that they liked him as a talent evaluator and in player development, and he's into analytics, and he collaborates with the front office. And that's exactly what David Stearns wants. None of that aligns with fiery leader, clubhouse culture changer. There's no Tony La Russa here coming in. There's no Jimmy Leland coming in here. There's no Davey Johnson coming in here. Joe Torre type. Those guys are done. I see people still bringing up these old school managers. They're done. They're not coming back. Andy Green is pretty much what you're going to get. And if you don't get Andy Green, my fear is you're going to get former Hall of Famer Albert Pujols. And that's going to try to sell tickets and help and do it for the fans. And at the end of the day, he's just a carnival act so that Stearns could hand him the blueprint and make sure everybody in the clubhouse plays hard. He'll get respect because of his position as a former player and Hall of Famer. And maybe he could, you know, get in some people's faces because he's Albert Pujols. Maybe there might be some value in that. I mean, Ryan Sandberg is a Hall of Famer. God rest his soul. He struggled a lot as a manager. A lot. It doesn't guarantee you, because you're a great player, that you're going to be a great manager. So you're in a situation now where there's really no help. The help is going to be how they improve the organization. Do I think they need to rebuild the whole thing? They're not too far off from that being a possibility. They definitely need to do somewhat of a buy-sell at the deadline, and I think they need to do more more selling than buying. But not knowing what the rules of the game are going to be with the CBA starting next year or whatever, I honestly don't know the pathway to improve this team. Because I do know this, the farm system has taken a hit after being some people felt being the best in baseball. None of the young players outside of Benjamin Ewing seem to be worth very much. McClain has gone from, hey, you got the next Jacob DeGrom, Matt Harvey, Zach Wheeler, Noah Syndergaard, to is he any good? Christian Scott is a nice player, but he's hurt. Freddie Peralta is a major disappointment. You don't have enough pitching depth. Weniger, Tong, we'll see from Zach Thornton now. He's going to get a chance. Not impressive in AAA. Okay, but not sure they're going to be any different than some of the young arms in the mold of a Peterson or a Matz or guys like that. The only claim to fame that this team could make right now is they got a really damn good bullpen, and maybe they could leverage that into some sort of deadline, loot, so to speak. Some kind of haul. You know, in a lowercase h on terms of haul. So you're happy that Mendoza's fired. Fine. What now? I mean, it's still a team that's got issues. It's still a front office that has a lot to prove. And, you know, everybody who wants Stearns to be fired, he is a president of baseball operations. The whole, you're saying you want the whole front office gone. And I get that if you say that, but you know how hard that's going to be? If you want to fire Stearns and purge the front office, you are saying, I want to rebuild. And that means I got to find out how to get Soto out of here. I got to find out how to get Lindor out of here. Good luck on both. I got a 5 years of bad baseball. And you want to talk about the nonsense I read? Well, you're going to lose the Mets fans forever. No, you're not going to lose the Mets fans forever that are like me, like you listening, that are hooked in. Once you're hooked in, you're hooked in. You're losing another generation. You had a chance with Soto, with stealing Soto, with everything that happened when they were in the OMG summer. You had a chance to get a generation of Mets fans, just like a generation of kids now are Knicks fans, and they will be for life. Regardless of what happens next year, the year after, or for the next 10 years, they are hooked. They fell in love. Just like I did in the 80s and 86 and a lot of others did. Just like the Yankees fans did in 96. And every single point, when you've had a chance to turn this thing back in your favor, 2000 lost the World Series, 2006 botched Game 7, didn't leverage it after that. 2015, didn't spend the money to leverage that. Now this, 2024, you've lost that opportunity. And you don't get many of them. And you rebuild for 5 years, which probably from a baseball standpoint is the best thing. You lose another generation of fans. And there's no guarantee that it'll work. And at this point, there's very little trust that the guy in charge is going to be able to do that. And I'll get more into this on Sunday because I got to think more. I got to listen to Stearns. Who's going to take this job if Stearns... After you are a big-time executive with a good job somewhere in baseball, you're going to come here after you watch this guy, highly rated executive who grew up a Mets fan, tons of success in Milwaukee, making $10 million a year. You're going to give up your career, even if it means a shot for the big chair, because you'll get another, if you're a good executive, you'll get another shot, and you may have a good job now, to come here to listen to me and fans with paper bags over their heads yell Pete Alonso and Joel Sherman and all these other idiots second-guess you, thinking that they could do a better job, and an owner with deep pockets who's got pressure on himself to win now. And even if you do win or have success, there's always the next day that things could go bad. And the minute there's a rough patch, they want your head. There's no patience here anymore. And yeah, fans always scream and yell and, you know, fire this guy. There's that's the nature of sports, but then there's the next level. Who's going to take that job? This is a blueprint of toxicity in sports. You had trouble before Stearns getting people to take the job because they're afraid of Cohen's reputation because of the book Black Edge and his history on Wall Street. Now, the way the baseball went... to quote the great, you know, what is it? I'm from Brooklyn. Forget about it. I'm from Brooklyn. Forget about it. I'll leave you on that. So that's my reaction. I'll be back on Sunday. We'll hear Stearns in a little bit. And, you know, that's the way it goes. You know, it's back to square one. We're in the worst possible position that we could possibly imagine. And if you had told me a year ago when the Mets had the best record in baseball and had 12 months of the best record in baseball after the summer of OMG that we'd be here, I'd laugh at you. I'd be like, okay, good job, Yankees fan. With Soto, can't believe we're here. But it has always been a fear since Cohen took over that if the money doesn't work out, this is going to get uglier than it ever has been before. And it has. All right, thanks for everybody for tuning in to this special emergency edition of the Talking Mets podcast. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets No G and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. Chat for free, premium content, updates on the show, all at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. And I want to thank the good folks from Believe Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy your Friday. Enjoy your weekend. We'll be back with another Talking Mets podcast on Sunday. Till then, take care, everybody.